Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report, more or less wrapping up the market moves today with Chris Temple as we are recording this about half an hour before the market close. Chris, one of the big standouts on my screen is the US dollar. It's up right around 93.50. Again, this isn't necessarily a breakout move by the dollar, but the dollar does seem to be establishing a trading range here in between, let's say, 93 to just under 95. That is coming off of its lows the very beginning of September, 91.75. The dollar, again, it's kind of choppy in this action, but it is having a carryover effect to a lot of different markets, something we will get to. Your comments, first and foremost, on the dollar and this little bounce off that 93 level.
Well, look, the dollar, Corey, as we've talked about for quite some time, has for a while now been the big carry trade currency in the world because the dollar has had such an extreme downward bias for a currency for several months. So the game is that you short or borrow dollars and you buy just about anything expected to benefit from whether it's Fed easing, whether it's the economy getting back to some health or at least being less bad than it was, etc. So people with this cheap dollar or short the dollar trade have bought everything from gold and silver to stocks to, you know, you name it. And whenever something bad happens, or there's even, you know, for a day here and there, some reason to question the rosy narrative that, you know, people engaged in those trades on, they tend to reverse them. So there was nothing that happened today in any foreign country, any foreign currency, none of that, that explains the dollar getting a pop back higher again after it had weakened some of late. It's simply that this risk on trade hit a couple of speed bumps today. You had two different companies, Eli Lilly and Johnson & Johnson, had vaccine trials halted. The market, it's all nonsense, but the market has got it into its head that, oh goody, if we can only get some workable vaccine and start selling it, that means that the economy gets back to health faster. I think that's garbage, but you know that's not what the market thinks. So they disagree with me, or I disagree with them. So when you had those two bits of news come out today, that exerted a little bit of downward pressure on stocks. And you continue to get, even though the market has still been dismissing this, there are still news items that are going in the wrong direction where all of this reopening is concerned. The Netherlands just cracked down hard today, going back to almost full lockdown mode in that country. The New York Philharmonic, more of a sentimental story than one that has any major economic impact, for the first time in 170 years, I think it is, they've canceled entire season. And that's just one of several examples of things going the wrong way again in New York City. Different parts of the U.S., as everybody has heard, that never did have a really big wave initially when a lot of the rest of the country did. They're getting it now, whether it's, you know, North Dakota, Wisconsin, where I just was, or whatever. So the fact that as we're recording about a half an hour before the market closed, and NASDAQ has long since turned positive again, and the Dow's down only 100 points now, as I just looked at the screen, rather than 200 plus as it was half or three quarters of an hour ago, still tells you that there's a lot of liquidity out there and the propensity of investors and traders, it seems, for the next 3 weeks between here and Election Day is just to stay pretty much on cruise control with an upward bias.
Is that why gold is lagging then? Because maybe their focus is away from, I don't know, all the bad stuff that could happen. They're just trying to ride this market out through the election?
That's one reason. Gold is far more susceptible to any kind of transient dollar strength, as I've been explaining, because unlike what had been the case for the majority of gold's run from late 2018, Corey, when it didn't matter what the dollar did. And in fact, gold and the dollar for a while there were going up at the same time for a lot of the same reasons. But the last several months, basically from the point, I had a chart on this recently, from the point at which gold had its breakout above what at the time had been resistance around 1750 to 1775 an ounce. Virtually all of that run from that breakout to almost 2100 that we saw early in August, all of it pretty much was due to the weak dollar. So for that period of time, the U.S. dollar and gold very much did behave inversely because of the carry trade. And so that's the first reason why gold today, at least, and silver more so, is getting hit. But there's a deeper meaning behind that as well, Corey, and I go into some detail in it in my new issue, which I'll be sending to members either tonight or sometime early tomorrow. And I explain that in there, that you know, gold, and here's what's curious about this and should give everybody, especially gold bugs, a little bit of pause. The way I get into this subject, in fact, in my new issue is a lot of times on market subjects or even individual companies, I love to use questions that readers or listeners or our broader audience send in to me. And somebody sent me a chart comparing the gold move from the bottom of around $1,050 an ounce, you know, a few years ago to today, and comparing that with the move that gold had in the 70s. And suggesting that like what we had in the 70s, we still have the bigger parabolic rise for gold ahead of us. And I explained a couple of reasons why that is not likely to happen. But what I go on to say, and you and I talked about this after the Warren Buffett news came out, we talked about this after Jerome Powell's speech in August, that all of the gold bug Pied Pipers were saying, oh, we told you this means gold's going to $5,000 or $10,000 an ounce. And I said after Powell's speech that this increased my belief that gold has peaked for the time being. Doesn't mean it's going to collapse. Doesn't mean there's a lot of downside. But when you understand what's going on today, I think that if you want to look at charts to compare the present day to, I think there's a much greater case to be made that provided nothing, you know, of significance goes wrong, and the central banks keep their foot on the accelerator, and more importantly, the fiscal authorities in the U.S. and elsewhere, Canada, I know the Prime Minister just was crowing about Canada's new infrastructure spending program. If everybody does that, I think the chart we're going to be comparing the present day to is the chart of broader commodities that we had from about 2002 to 2007 or 8. Gold will do well in that environment, but not as well as industrial metals, not as well as some of the beaten down energy commodities and things like that as well, because you'll have this broader, but still largely non-inflationary, as the Fed describes it and as the markets understand it. Let me stress that. That's the environment you're going to have. So I think that when you see the stock market, as far as the NASDAQ at new highs, the S&P 500 very close to its old high from not that many weeks ago, you know, and gold still, you know, lagging, that tells you that investors today see that there's going to be a broader melt up in assets. We've talked about the whole stimulus argument. The market has already determined, probably correctly so, that nothing of significance is going to happen before the election, but everybody's convinced it will happen afterward. Now, they may get their hopes dashed, but that's what everybody thinks right now. So if you believe that the economy is still weak, which doesn't give a lot of room for the kind of inflation that the markets would get worked up over, but that the Fed is going to push against that, eventually the government pushes against that, then there's a lot of things in, you know, standing in line ahead of gold that investors are going to be more animated by, and I think correctly so. And again, I say that not because I'm bearish on gold. I'm not at all. I think gold has got a great future ahead of it for possibly a number of years, but there are things that have got better futures. And that's what the market is telling you when other things are doing well and gold is lagging.
Okay, very interesting comments there, Chris. And again, it's a choppy market right now, but we do need to understand the big picture of everything. I want to wrap it up with a quick comment on yields. In the U.S., yields have continued to, let's say, grind higher. I'm looking at the 10-year here and the washout in March, a low of 3.98. We're the whole way back to, let's say, in the low sevens right now. So still, yields are very much depressed. But a little bit of bias to the upside when it comes to the yield environment. Is this also telling us a big picture of we might be seeing higher yields moving forward?
You know, that's something I also address in the issue I'm working on, because as you well remember yourself, Corey, for a long time I was touting what I called the odd couple trade. Historically, bond prices and gold wouldn't go up at the same time, but they've done it more often than not now for actually the majority of the time, really, since the 2008 financial crisis. That's been the case the majority of the time. But the odd couple has separated a while ago. I don't know if we're going to go through the full-fledged divorce yet or not, but that's an interesting question, because, you know, there's a lot of misinformation and you know, sales pitch hype type of stuff out there from the usual suspects about why gold is going to do handsprings if the Democrats sweep here on Election Day and all that kind of stuff, which is nonsensical for a variety of reasons we'll probably talk about down the road. But a more plausible scenario does exist, that if we get that Democrat sweep, and again, perceptions a lot of times in the markets are greater than reality and facts, I do see some room potentially for a fairly significant move higher in long-term interest rates. Nothing debilitating. It won't be because foreign governments are dumping U.S. debt or anything like that. In fact, one of the many myths that I'm trying to get people to understand right now is that the longer-term health of the U.S. dollar and the dollar's ongoing role as the world's reserve currency has a much better chance under a Joe Biden presidency than it does under Donald Trump. So I know I just made some people's heads explode when I said that, but I've explained that. In fact, I put some of that information on my website. People can look at it for free. So, you know, the whole idea of interest rates going up is that if you get a decisive Democrat Party sweep, I mean, I'd probably, if you put a gun to my head, would prefer a Republican Party sweep. I'm not holding my breath to get that. But if you had a Democrat sweep, yeah, you'd have a big melt up relative to what the puny yields are right now in long-term interest rates. That wouldn't all be necessarily a bad signal. It would be a signal that the markets expect big fiscal stimulus, big infrastructure spending. And what you would probably see at the same time that you saw long-term yields move up a bit would be a lot of juice in a lot of different commodity areas.
All right, Chris, we're going to wrap it up there. A lot to take in, and I think some very good and interesting comments when it comes to where money could land, even in this environment of easy money heading forward. No doubt we're going to be choppy until the election, maybe even past the election, if this is contested, which it looks like it might be. But you know what? When we do finally get a little bit more clarity and some more fiscal stimulus, let's see where it lands, because you do have a good argument of why it won't just be precious metals and why there are other sectors in the resource sector that should outperform. Chris, thanks for your time today. I appreciate this market wrap. We'll chat again later this week.
Take care.